Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo.
And I'm Bob Breitall. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics. One from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review.
This is Weekly Comics Spotlight 152 for comics originally released on July 7th, 2010. Now, starting us off in DC is Batman Odyssey number 1. It's part 1 of 12. It's by Neil Adams. And he's doing pretty much, well, I was going to say almost everything on this. Certainly the story, the art. I think he's got some help on the inking and the colors. But what did you think of this, Bob? Because I think we're going to have a difference of opinion based on you having started reading comics earlier than I did.
Not necessarily.
Oh, well, okay then.
I don't know where that's going, but I had mixed feelings about this. I mean, I really love Neil Adams.
Yeah.
You know, so I love his storytelling, you know, and the way he's like laying out the panels in this and, you know, just the, you know, panel to panel storytelling and art wise, I think it's really nice.
Mm-hmm.
That said, you know, I open it up to the front, to the first page, and man, Bruce Wayne is like turning into a werewolf or a man bat or something. Look at the hair on the dude's arm.
And that's what bothered you?
Well, that and the fact that his face, he doesn't look anything at all like Bruce Wayne. But the first thing that stuck out at me was this giant hairy arm that seems to be reaching out of the page at me. That caught my eye first, and then I tracked up to the face and said, wow, that really doesn't look like Bruce Wayne at all. And Neil Adams has drawn Batman Bruce Wayne. I went and checked in my Batman by Neil Adams, and he doesn't look like this the other times Neil's drawn him, so I don't know what he was thinking. It's allegedly set in the past, so I've got some just storytelling issues, like, you know, Robin's not in the costume that Robin wore when it was Dick Grayson, and he's got like a flying car and, you know, this kind of stuff, which it's just a little wonky. I guess I can look at it as a out of continuity Batman story. Just let Neil Adams go crazy and draw something that looks cool.
Interesting, because that's in some respects a little similar to what I was thinking, and a little different than the what I had thought your take was going to be on it. Because this issue, first off, Neil Adams, I mean, talented creator. He's doing some good art, good story here. But man, this issue started off just on the wrong foot for me entirely. I mean, everything from the cover with that bullet, and I'm thinking, damn, that looks like it's gotta hurt, to that opening page where he's describing it, and I'm like, just how tiny does that bullet have to have been to have gone from, like, the wrist down the length of the arm and miss both bones in the forearm? Maybe that's possible. I don't know. I'm not any sort of expert in firearms, but I actually know a little bit about the forearm, having had my right one rebuilt essentially twice. And I'm just like, wow, I don't know. You know. And then we actually get to Batman, you know, in action. He's there with a gun. And that's just not the Batman I know.
Well, you know, I think the issue there, and this is where I'll kind of take a different, that is a flashback to, like, pretty much one of the first times he's putting on the costume. And I don't think they established this for the Silver Age Batman necessarily, but
the Golden Age started with a gun.
The Golden Age Batman did run around with a gun, you know, at first. So I think that's what he was calling back towards. So I didn't have that much of an issue with that, because it was a flashback and he, you know, ended up not shooting the guy.
I agree with that, but it was one of those that I was willing to make some concessions because it was a period piece. And I think it was a period piece kind of in two ways. One, it's set early in Batman's career, you know, so I expect to give it a little leeway and stuff. And frankly, I hadn't even caught that he's got Dick Grayson in Tim Drake's costume, you know, in the Robin stuff. That, for some reason, didn't even click with me, but it should have. But it also felt like a period piece, and where it was not working as well for me is that it felt like it was a story set early in Batman's career as told in the 1970s style, which was a couple of years prior to me really reading Batman. So I was expecting you to have found this a little bit more of a natural fit, if you will. Because, I don't know, were you reading some of the Neil Adams Batman stuff off the rack?
No, I wasn't reading DC that early.
Ah, okay.
I read it after. I read the Neil Adams stuff when it was reprinted in the 80s. You know, they did all those reprints.
Yeah, and I got a lot of those, too. I mean, his Green Arrow, Green Lantern stuff, too. I mean, the guy's a master at the craft. And this issue, I think, really shows that. But then, you know, there are a couple of things, you know, Robin with a gun, Robin sparring with Man-Bat, things like that, that just felt a little weird. Add to that the, I'm going to use the term dated storytelling technique of the thought balloons. And I hate to call it that way, because when I started reading comics, thought balloons were just the natural. But it felt really weird reading all of this internal, you know, thought narration, because it's been so long since thought balloons were in common use.
Well, see, that doesn't, that didn't even faze me at all, because not only did I read that back then, but I mean, I read a lot of back issues as they go along too. So I kind of like read stories one way and another. So it didn't occur to me as being, I didn't even notice it. Put it that way.
Fair enough. I guess for me, I'm doing so much reading in the here and now comics and not having as much time to do the back issues that, I think I have a better appreciation for how newer readers feel when they read stories that have that kind of really verbosity, both with the word balloon or the thought balloons, I mean, but also there are a lot of captions in this. This is a very text heavy kind of a book. But that also worked in so much as there's just a ton of story in here.
I would say this is a good book as long as someone's not expecting the current Batman. They're not expecting or bothered by something that is really kind of a sidestep away from continuity. I mean, it's relatively okay, but I mean, they're just, if you think too hard about too many things, it'll just make you nuts. And, you know, it's just.
Well, that's a good way to put it.
Neil Adams fans, you know, it's like it's a great book for people who want to look at a Neil Adams story and kind of drink up the Neil Adams art and don't get too wrapped around the axle about, you know, little continuity or big continuity glitches that creep into the story, because that's kind of not what it's about.
Well, it is a very interesting juxtaposition of older aspects both of storytelling style and story density, and newer things like the newer Robin costume, the flying Batmobile, which really just reeked too much of Nick Fury, Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. for me. It just, I have problems with the current flying Batmobile too, but this one, this early in Batman's career, it's just, I don't know. But it made for a really odd juxtaposition. At first, I was curious. It's like, okay, yeah, I remember Man-Bat being kind of a more of a fixture in the Batman stuff back then than he has been over the last couple of decades for the most part. But he was well used here, too. So there were a couple of things where, again, the story started off kind of bumpy for me. But because it was so well told, there was so much story in here. The art, of course, was beautiful. You know, it's certainly something I would recommend. Anyone who obviously is a Neil Adams fan, they're probably picking this up regardless, or really for any long-term kind of hardcore Batman fan. I'm curious where this is going to go over the 12 issues, but I think it'll certainly be worth the read. For me, even though I had a lot of kind of nitpicks here and there, it was a very strong 4 out of 5. It was a good, well-done comic.
Yeah, and I was actually a little harsher on it than that. I was kind of like, you know, on art alone, I could give it a low 4. I mean, it gets dragged down by, you know, just storytelling continuity issues for me. But I, you know, it's a 4. But, you know, that's because I like Neil Adams a lot. If I was kind of indifferent towards Neil Adams, this would not have worked for me. So, I mean, that's all I would say. I mean, if someone's a Neil Adams fan, they don't need us telling them about this book. I'm sure they know about it. If you're kind of don't know if you're, you know, like Neil Adams or not, you can pick it up and look at it. If you've never seen Neil Adams before, you owe it to yourself to look at it. But if you already know that you can kind of take or leave Neil Adams, I would not spend any time on this.
Yeah, fair enough. Move on to our next book.
Yeah, Shadowland number 1 from Marvel.
I think they should have called this Shadow Country or Shadow Planet, given how many titles and issues it's going to hit. I mean, this thing is just going all over the place. I thought this was a strong start to the storyline. Obviously, a lot of it's been set up in the Daredevil comic. I really don't know that it needs to go hit the 32 or whatever comics that are on that checklist at the back of the issue. That just seems like they're expanding the story far beyond what it needs to be. And I'm pretty sure I'm up to date on Daredevil, but this just felt a little out of step with the character. I know they've been building this for a while, but everything from the switch to the black costume to his hardcore attitude just felt a little abrupt. And I mean, did I miss something? Did I miss an issue somewhere?
I had the exact same thing. I was like, well, wait a second. This is leading into Daredevil 508. I'm like digging around. Did I not read 507 or something? Like, you know, it just seemed like there was something that didn't fill in there to me also. I had that same feeling.
Okay, I feel better with that because, I mean, it was a good story. It certainly set things up, and I know I read 507. But, again, where did the new costume come from? Where did his attitude seemed to have really changed, and not for the better. And I thought this was, again, a good setup for what's going to be apparently just a huge storyline for the street-level characters. I liked how they set up the Avengers, particularly Iron Fist and Luke Cage, in this issue and use them and kind of almost set up the, okay, when it gets too far, the Avengers are going to step in and take care of things, kind of, I don't want to say telegraphing the ending, but certainly setting expectations for how it might end. I thought it was kind of odd that the Punisher, Spider-Man, and Moon Knight were pretty prominent on the cover, but really only appeared in a single panel each.
Yeah, that, you know, Spider-Man is front and center on the cover. And he's like, there's a view of his back in one panel, you know, and that's, you know, as you pointed out, it's like in the panel, like right next to the one panel that has Moon Knight, and the one panel that has the Punisher. You know, this is a case of them selling this book, you know, kind of like, I don't know, based on these characters are popular, buy this book.
I mean,
don't open it up till you get it home.
Yeah, obviously yeah. Those characters are going to show up later in, you know, the plethora of places this is going to be, but
I might have featured Daredevil in his black costume on the cover.
Yeah, maybe a mirror image of how he was and how he is, kind of a, I don't know. There are a couple of things they could have done with the cover to make it a little better. I mean, I enjoyed the issue. I thought it was good. Certainly, I think this is something that anyone into kind of, again, that street-level character group at Marvel should certainly check this out, at least this issue, not certainly all of it, but pick and choose what they're interested in. If you're following Daredevil, obviously I think you have to be reading this to presumably understand what's going on, because I thought a major plot point for the character happened here that's got to, you know, play out in his own book. But, you know, I think there's a lot of story here, whether it can sustain how much output they're going to, you know, crank out on the Shadowland stuff. I don't know, you know.
Well, we can address it later on. Maybe we can revisit this in a few months because I'm not planning to get any Shadowland books other than the 5-issue Shadowland miniseries and Daredevil, which I am already buying.
Yeah.
I am not buying a single one of any of these other books.
I, of course, am an easy sell.
Well, I'm getting the Thunderbolts. There's 2 issues of Thunderbolts in there, and I buy Thunderbolts anyway.
Yeah.
So I guess out of the, you say there's 32 books here.
That's what I counted, yeah.
I will have 5 Shadowland books, the 2 Thunderbolts, so that's 7.
5 Daredevil.
The 4 Daredevils. There's 5 Daredevils, right?
Yes, 5.
So I'll have like 12 of the 32 books.
So roughly a third.
Yeah.
But you'll
be
missing
out. I'm curious on, you know, what if anything I'm missing. Now, fortunately or unfortunately, my history with Marvel of picking up these side series in the past, DC also, they're not blameless on this. I have in the past jumped whole hog in these events and got the side series and stuff. And I have really not yet found them to add a tremendous amount of value to the core story.
I would say Blackest Night was one of the few where most of the side stories justified themselves, not to the point of, oh my god, they're critical, but if they did that, then we'd all be complaining about the main story not having everything in it.
Yeah.
So I certainly think there'll be some interesting things along the side here on Shadowlands, the Power Man stuff, whatever. But yeah, I suspect a lot of these are going to be fairly optional. But I'll read them and I'll find out, so I'll know.
Yeah, 20 books for, you know, $3 or $4 a piece. So that's, you know, Marvel's, I want to say Marvel. Marvel and DC, these guys, it's like, you know, if they can extract a buck out of the fan.
Well, DC's hiking everything up to $3.99 too. So, I mean, for me, this was, again, a strong start to the storyline. I give it a 4 out of 5, but kind of a cautious recommendation. Unless you're a hardcore fan of either Daredevil or the other street-level characters, you know, think about how deep you might want to get into this or if you want to skip it.
Personally, I would say anyone who's not reading Daredevil absolutely does not need to bother with this.
I would.
If you don't care enough about the character Daredevil to be reading Daredevil, you don't need to be reading this book either.
I would say there's one exception to that, and that would be anyone for whatever reason is a hardcore follower of the Hand because of the stuff they've done with Elektra and other characters. They may be interested in that group. But again, if that's the case, they should be reading Daredevil anyways.
Yeah, which, yeah. I mean,
that's
if
fair.
You're a hardcore Hand fan, you would have been reading Daredevil, I would hope.
Yeah.
So
again, you know, a 4 out of 5 for me. So.
And then our last book of the week is from Archaea. It's called Critical Millennium, The Dark Frontier, number 1 of 4. What do you think about this one?
I had mixed feelings, and I can tell you exactly where the feelings split. And that would be right around, let me see if it's a couple of pages, I think, before the staple or whatever, when they start on chapter 2.
That's exactly my feeling. It's like, we've talked about this a number of times. I do not like the storytelling technique of show us something in the future and then flashback and tell the story from the beginning.
Yeah, I was really annoyed by that. And it's funny because I'm reading that first part and I thought, wow, that first page really sets the mood. Kind of a downer, but a very different kind of an opening to what, I mean.
And just all the background stuff was, you know, just like looking at it. And I probably spent 5 minutes just looking at the differences between those panels. It was a really effective panel. I mean, a page rather, but then it just kind of went off and
but
got a little crazy and didn't go anywhere.
You look at that, particularly that second panel where we first see the interior of the spaceship, and you look at it, and it's, I don't want to say a stereotypical, this could have been an upbeat Star Trek-ish kind of sci-fi story or whatever, but in these 5 panels, they very clearly said, nope, not going to be that way, you know, so they set the scene very quickly, and then we get a little bit of a long, extended, okay, this is kind of a darker story or whatnot. And then
they get kind of weird 2001-ish,
you know,
with a twist.
Yeah, we get a good revelation, and then a strong beat for the end of that first chapter. And then we start what could as well be a completely different story. You know, and the second story was good, was interesting. There was a lot of stuff to it. Had some interesting kind of a sci-fi futurist, you know, aspects to it that were entertaining. I think they did a decent job setting up the world and, you know, what we need to know about aspects of it. And there's a lot of story, and part of it is in a couple of places there are a lot of panels, a couple of places there's a lot of dialogue and, you know, exposition and stuff. And they cover a lot of ground in this issue. And it's the kind of thing, if it had been either the first or the second half had kind of filled out the whole issue, I'd probably be back for more, almost no questions asked. But that combination of the two, just, frankly, it kind of confused me. It's like, well, if I come back next issue, is the first half going to follow the first part of the storyline, the second half the second part, or what? Or are we going to just pick up where the second half of the story left off, and what we saw at the beginning is kind of the end of the whole story? You know, it left me a little confused, and at this point, I don't know if I'll be back or not. What I'll probably do is check out the Archaea booth at Con and see if I can get a better feel for the series there.
Well, I think it would have been much more effective, personally. If you want to do this jump into the future, the first page was brilliant.
Yes.
Loved the first page. First page, The second page should have been chapter 2, Verge, the past, T-minus 33 months and counting. And then start telling us the story of how they got there. And we shouldn't have gotten, what did we get? 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. We shouldn't have gotten 12 pages of this. That was a mistake in my opinion.
Yeah, because it felt like it was, again, two fairly different tones and stories, even though there's obviously a couple of characters in common or whatnot. But it took what could have been a very cool, focused vision, and I felt fragmented fairly severely. Yeah.
No, I agree with you on that. I actually really liked, I think the first page was brilliant.
Yeah.
And then I really enjoyed the second half of it, starting at, chapter 2, because you're getting this future world, you're getting some takes into the politics of it, it's kind of like flipped over and, the whites are the minority now, the world has changed and watch out for, don't get caught by some white guy in a dark alley kind of thing. They're kind of flipping, current day racism, flipping it over. You get some of the environmental things, the hunting things and just, what's happened to the planet Earth, in that. And you're getting that they're moving towards faster than light travel and moving off of Earth. And I find that really cool. I really liked that. That aspect of it. And I would have gotten 11 more pages of that. It would have just, chopped out that part at the beginning.
Well, the other thing I found interesting is if you look particularly the first three pages of this, again, you got that very, very strong opening. And if you treat all of the caption box like a voiceover narration, which is what it would be in a movie, you get a very strong start to a movie. You even get movie-style credits with the Arkea Entertainment in association with Blam Ventures, and all that kind of stuff. So the first chapter has a very cinematic movie feel to it. But then when you get to that second chapter, it's got what I would consider much more of a television feel to it in terms of covering more ground and at a pace where they're setting up something for a long-term kind of a game. And something that they could go back to for multiple seasons of a television series versus, okay, we got a 2-hour movie in and out kind of a pacing. So I felt, again, the two parts were very good, but they were very different in terms of style, approach, content. And I agree, if they'd cut down the first part, maybe that would help. But, at this point, it's a strong 3, a weak 4 for me. I'll probably be generous and give it a 4, but it didn't sell me enough. It didn't give me enough of a clue where that next issue is going to pick up and stuff.
I would say you're being far too generous giving it a 4 if you're not even sure you're going to buy the next issue.
That's true. You're right. I'll go with the 3.
I mean, I give it a 3. I will be back for the next issue, and I'm giving it a 3. But I give it a 3 because of what I consider to be a flawed storytelling technique for me. And I'm sure, I'm not the end all authority on this, right? Somebody else could look at this and they might love this storytelling technique, but I look at it as 11 wasted pages on when they could have been building up momentum and actually maybe getting us a little closer to launch.
I guess that's maybe where I've got a differing view, because I would argue that it was the second chapter that was more the wasted pages than the first. The first was going in a very different direction than most sci-fi type space, saga type things that we see. Whereas the second chapter, the environment's gone to hell. We're recycling, but it's too late. Oh, everything's gone extinct. We've got to leave the planet. It's dead. I've seen that before. So I didn't think it was quite as groundbreaking either in terms of content or style, whereas I thought that opening had a lot more of a unique style and set the tone immediately and effectively. So
it just goes to show different things appeal to different people.
Exactly.
Because I haven't seen this particular take. I mean, if you reduce it to, the very simplified vision of the second half that you just did, I could say the same thing about the first half, that I've seen that before too.
I guess the question is, have you seen it as artfully done? Because it was the execution, not the content that got me.
I essentially saw, some of this at the end here, artfully done by Stanley Kubrick at the end of 2001.
Fair enough.
but you know, and it's not exactly the same. So that's really simplifying it. Just like I'm saying, I don't think I've seen the second half done exactly this way either. There's enough differences and enough nuances to it that I guess, just for me, I'm more interested by the political, you know, implications and the cultural implications of the future world and, you know, the characterization and stuff like that, and them actually building the faster than light ship. You know, whereas you gravitated more towards the, hey, we're out in space and flying around and doing this kind of stuff. And it's just like, what kind of story do you want? And
well,
that said,
to me, it wasn't that they're flying around in space.
That's the dichotomy you have, right? Oh. You have two completely different stories here.
To me, though, it wasn't that they're flying around in space doing stuff. It's, again, they do what, you know, again, visually looks almost like the bridge of an Enterprise-type Star Trek ship. But then with the narration, you know, clearly go in a very different direction very quickly and say, wow, you know, oh, isn't this great to be out in space? No, really, it sucks. Here's why. And that kind of dystopic view to the final frontier or whatever, that's what I found well done.
Well, I mean, that all happened on the first page. I would argue that, you know, pages 2 through 12 kind of swiftly jump past that into, okay, now I hit some weird thing at the edge of the universe, you know, and I would have more liked an exploration of what were all the things that happened in between those panels on the first page. And I didn't get any of that.
Fair enough.
So, I mean, anyway, I mean, it did feel kind of schizophrenic. I think you'll probably agree on that.
Totally, totally.
You know, you got like two completely different things kind of jammed together here. And,
it felt more like a flip book than two chapters of one story.
Yeah, and I think that it might appeal different ways to different people. Obviously, it appealed very differently to you than it did to me. So, you know, I think we both liked it for different reasons, which is actually interesting. But, you know, it's something that, you know, having some kind of clear storytelling line from the beginning to the end might have been a better idea for a first issue of a miniseries. Again, as difference between the first chapter of a trade paperback.
Yeah.
Because you're trying to get somebody to come back for the next issue.
Yeah, I would agree with that. So we're recording early this week, so I have read absolutely nothing else in the box this week. I assume same for you?
I got it about 2 hours ago, so
yeah.
Correct.
I did find it entertaining that we had first issues of not only X-Men, but also X-Women this week. So mutants of each gender equally represented. Kind of hilarious. It was another decent-sized week for me. I got about 41 books. So
yeah, I got a whole bunch of books. I didn't count them, but I only got comics this week.
That's surprising. Usually
not a single, no hardcovers, no statues or busts or toys or anything else. It was like a really small box from DCBS.
I was going to say, it's surprising for you because normally you get at least some trade, hardcover, or something. So, interesting.
Now, I think next week that will be the case. I believe, because I went out to the comic shop today to pick up the books that we're going to be reviewing next week.
Mm-hmm.
And Absolute Planetary Volume 2 was out, and, you know, there were some other bigger things. So next week's shipment should be a good size. Plus, since next week is the week that is shipping, well, actually, it's this week. This week and next week are both big weeks because they're the weeks that come right before Comic-Con. And I think a lot of companies try to, you know, jam stuff out.
Yeah, if they can't stuff out in time for Con, they will. So I haven't even looked at how big my packing list is from DCBS for next week, but no doubt it's huge.
But actually, it's this week that's, to me, the more important of those 2 weeks, because a lot of the people who are at Con are already at Con next Wednesday. So they're not getting their shipments of stuff. So it's stuff that they get this week that they're able to schlep over to Con, unless they're just like the local shop.
Well, I'm thinking more also the publishers and them, you know, the creators.
Yeah, but even them, you know, unless they get it in advance or something. And a lot of times they do.
Yeah. So speaking of Con, the podcasting panel is going to be Thursday evening at 5 p.m. That's going to be in room 32AB. That's upstairs, the bay side, the water side of the convention center, kind of tucked away in back and stuff. And then afterwards, we're going out to dinner. Where did we decide? Rock Bottom Brewery?
Rock Bottom Brewery.
Should be fun. We ate there, I think, last year and stuff. So if you're a fan of the show and stuff, please come by, say hi, and you're welcome to join us for dinner that night. So anything else? Does that pretty much do it?
I think that does it.
Cool.
Join us next week when we discuss The Mighty Crusaders, number one from DC, Uncanny X-Men, The Heroic Age, number one from Marvel, and Pat Lee's Widow Warriors, number one from Dynamite.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.